presented by Pharma.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Playbook co-author Ryan Lizza. It's Tuesday, May 28th, and here's what's driving the day. Democratic bedwetting is back. Chris Catalago, Sally Goldenberg, and Elena Schneider take the pulse of top Democratic strategists and elected officials this morning and report that, quote, a pervasive sense of fear has settled in at the highest levels of the Democratic Party over President Joe Biden's reelection prospects, even among office holders and strategists who had previously expressed confidence about the coming battle with Donald Trump. This piece is sure to ignite another debate about how freaked out Democrats should be about Biden's status in the race. Let me just read you a few choice quotes from this article. Here's a Democratic operative, anonymous. This isn't, oh my God, Mitt Romney might become president. It's, oh my God, the democracy might end. That about captures some of the freak out. There's also some interesting discussion of Trump's forays into blue territory in recent weeks and how seriously Democrats should take that. Manhattan Borough President Mark Levine says this, New York Democrats need to wake up. The number of people in New York, including people of color that I come across who are saying positive things about Trump, is alarming. He's talking about New York, which went for Biden by 23 points last time. Next up, international outrage continued to mount yesterday over Israel's deadly strike on a Rafah displacement camp that killed dozens of civilians and that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu called a tragic mistake. In Washington, as several prominent Democrats expressed outrage over the attack, President Biden was silent. But an NSC spokesperson weighed in, telling Politico, the devastating images following an IDF strike in Rafah last night that killed dozens of innocent Palestinians are heartbreaking. Israel has a right to go after Hamas, and we understand this strike killed two senior Hamas terrorists who are responsible for attacks against Israeli civilians. But as we've been clear, Israel must take every precaution possible to protect civilians. So one thing notable in that statement is that the NSC is agreeing with the Israeli government that, in their words, two senior Hamas terrorists were targeted in this attack. We'll be watching closely today to see what, if anything, the president has to say about the attack, as well as his press secretary, who will be briefing at 1:30. But all that news is going to be competing for attention this week with what's happening in Manhattan as the Trump hush money case goes to a jury. Joining me now to talk about what to expect this week, including the possibility of Trump going to jail if he's convicted, is national correspondent Betsy Woodruff Swan. Good morning, Betsy.
Good morning, Ryan. How's it going?
Good. All right. So a big week, really interesting, important piece you have this morning. Let's start with this. What do people need to know about how this process will play out, the mechanics of it all?
This week, of course, Trump's lawyers will present their closing arguments and the jury will deliberate or will start deliberating and will receive jury instructions regarding how they need to think about whether or not to convict Trump. If the jury convicts Trump, after then a certain amount of time will pass until there is a sentencing hearing. At the sentencing hearing, prosecutors and Trump's defense lawyers will both be able to weigh in on whether or not they think he needs to spend time in prison or what they believe the appropriate punishment would be. It's unclear if Judge Mershon would hand down a sentence at that hearing or if he would take some more time to deliberate. But in terms of step by step, that's how it's going to play out.
Just one question on that, Betsy. When we hear people say, oh, this will be appealed and that process will take a long time, how does that factor into the mechanics and the timing of sentencing?
That's a good question. There are any number of decisions made by the judge at the trial level that could be appealed. Appeals will happen after the sentence gets handed down. Of course, Trump can't ask an appellate judge to weigh in on a sentence until it's been sent down. From a technical standpoint, you can file an appeal whenever you want. From a reality-based standpoint and a process standpoint, those appellate proceedings would begin after everything is concluded at the trial level.
Got it. Okay. All right. So what are the options that Judge Mershon has? How much flexibility does he have here, assuming a guilty verdict? And then, of course, I realize that, you know, embedded in that assumption is how many of the 34 counts and all that. But give us the broad view on that.
He has a significant amount of leeway in terms of what he might do, ranging from the most punitive, which would be sentencing him to 1 year for each felony count he would be convicted of. Trump is facing four felony counts, which means he could be sentenced to 4 years, but those years would almost certainly be served concurrently. It would almost certainly be 1 year. That would be the most punitive approach that Mershon could take. The least punitive, of course, would be probation or even something less demanding than that. That's an option in New York where defendants are essentially out on their own recognizance with a very small level of supervision and then don't face any significant hindrances in terms of their lifestyle for a certain period of time. And Mershon could also sentence Trump to community service. So it's, you know, the maximum sentence that Trump would face is not particularly long, although a year in prison is no joke. Nobody wants that. But it's not particularly long. And that's because the felonies that are charged, they're the most minor, low level type of felony that exists in the New York system, basically the most just one notch above misdemeanors. And that's why the amount of potential prison time Trump faces is so small, especially compared to other people who are facing charges related to January 6th, the fake electors scheme, et cetera. Trump is not staring down the barrel of significant prison time, but again, nobody wants to go to prison for a year.
For this piece, you talked to former prosecutors, people who have been in that office, who have a real sort of understanding of the nuances of a case like this. What was the range of opinion there in terms of, you know, likely outcomes?
It was also a mix. Diana Florence is a former prosecutor in that office who actually ran against Alvin Bragg when he was campaigning to be district attorney in New York. And she told me that if she'd been the prosecutor working on the case, she certainly would ask the judge to hand down prison time. She said that simply based on the severity of the conduct alleged in her viewing and the significance of the case, its ability to sort of send an important signal about how the law functions and about fairness in our criminal justice system, she said if she were the prosecutor weighing in, she would ask for prison time and would expect that Mershon would give Trump some certain level of prison time. That is not a consensus view among the people that I spoke to. There were others who said that they thought it would be very unlikely just because of the political ramifications of putting a leading presidential contender in prison. That's not something judges are supposed to consider, but it's impossible for them not to. And then Norm Pattis, who is a really interesting attorney who's represented a number of high-profile celebrity defendants, including the soccer mom, madam, who is what she sounded like.
I don't know about that case. Wow. All
right. It's a word of Google. Pattis told me that he would be shocked if Mershon gave Trump a prison sentence because it would be so politically electric. And what Pattis also said is that when you're arguing a case that has just an extraordinary level of media attention, media activity, of course, there's probably never been a case with more than Trump's, it simply changes how judges think. It changes how juries think. It feels different. He said it brings a different energy into the courtroom. He said that energy is not necessarily a good thing. It's hard to predict how that energy will impact the participants, but it's a very real thing. And it just makes this moment all the more intense and challenging for Judge Mershon.
Betsy, thank you so much for breaking this down. Excellent stuff and great piece.
Thanks, Ryan. I appreciate your having me.
And for your schedule today, the Senate and the House are out and there is nothing on President Biden's schedule. I'm Ryan Lizza. Thanks for listening.
The 340B drug pricing program is supposed to help vulnerable patients access medicines at qualifying hospitals and clinics. It's meant to be a safety net for those who really need it. Instead, 340B is padding the profits of PBMs, chain pharmacies, and big hospitals. Let's fix 340B so it can help the patients that need it most. Visit phrma.org/340b to learn more.